Listen up, ladies and gentlemen.
This is
Cinemasters Podcast.
Welcome to episode 55 of the Cinemasters podcast. As always, I am Daniel James.
I'm Andrew Miller.
And I'm Tyler Crouch.
Yeah, not sure where Jacob is. He's been busy doing life. And so hasn't been able to get back to us on things. But I'm sure he will do his best to get back for next episode.
We've all been busy with life.
This is true. That's why we're a few weeks later than I would have liked. But, oh well. If you have something to say about it, send us an email at thecinemasters@gmail.com.
Yeah. Or call. Can't they call too?
Probably, but I don't
know. Or don't be rude about it. We'll do the show when we want to damn do the show.
We want your feedback.
Yeah. But only if you want to give us feedback. Don't force it out.
Yeah.
So. We're talking about Oscar-nominated animated features. Actually, are we talking about winners? Did we all choose winners? No, I did not.
No.
I tried, but we'll get into that. All right. Oscar-nominated animated movies. Say that 5 times fast. But before we get into that, let's talk some trailer action. Andrew, what do you got for us?
So this is fresh off the market right now. Obviously, really nothing matters in the news right now except the Star Wars Celebration. So if you're not paying attention to that, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, literally nothing in the world else matters but
right.
That.
So obviously for the last couple days, there's been the reveal of the new trailer which will be talked about in a minute here. There have been panels, and today was the panels with Gareth Edwards, who's directing the first spin-off film that's going to come out in 2016. What we've known so far is that it's called Rogue One, and it was starring Felicity Jones in some role, amongst other actors here and there, Ben Mendelsohn. But we hadn't known what the actual plot was until now, but they revealed the log line and a short teaser that's not online. But basically the reveal is this. It will focus on a group of sort of a rogue group, not rogue, but rather a sort of what seems to be a furious, or not furious, but Magnificent Seven thing of people from all walks of life who come together and work for the Rebel Alliance to steal the Death Star plans. So basically, it's a prequel to A New Hope, and it will be focusing on that mission with where all the Bothans died.
I was just about to say that.
To get the plans. So it's, you know, it's, this is the, we've speculated that these will that these spin-off movies will take place during the original trilogy. Now we have firm confirmation about that.
And you know what they are calling these movies? They are considering what they're calling these movies. Like, you have the saga and the,
right.
Anything that's anthology. Outside the saga, anthology, which I think is awesome. Yeah. I think that's really cool.
I have mixed feelings on it. I can't lie. Of course I'm excited for it. I mean, how can you not be? I'll take any sort of new Star Wars stories. However, I'm not sure this story is one that needs to be told. I really don't care how they got those plans. So, you know, part of me goes, oh, great, we get this, you know, it's cool that we get to explore the non-Jedi folk. We get to see the, you know, the normal foot soldiers and pilots and see the world from their perspective. That's great. But then the actual narrative that they're going with seems like they're just trying to sort of appease, like, the fans being like, hey, remember that in the movies? We're never going to tell you to have that happen, which is not something I necessarily need to see. I mean, the main problem I've had with these is the rumors that there would be a Han Solo spinoff or prequel film. And a part of me just feels like Han Solo is a completely fully formed character when he appears in the first Star Wars. I really don't need to know what he used to be up to, nor should I know, because I think it might minimize the impact of the character. But, I mean, look, the fact of the matter is we're getting more Star Wars movies. And it'd be lying to say that it isn't interesting that they're making all these movies to explore the different aspects of the universe. I also think Gareth Edwards, while not a great actor or a good director with writing, is a great visual director. And so I'd be curious to see the sort of grittier aesthetic that he says he's going to try to put into the Star Wars franchise.
Yeah. I like Ben Mendelsohn. He's in the show, the new Netflix show, Bloodline. He does a fantastic job. I haven't finished it yet.
He's always good, whatever he's in.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Rumors are that I've heard that he's playing Han Solo in that movie, which, to your point that you made, I don't want to see another Han Solo.
How can he play Han Solo? He looks older than Harrison Ford.
That's what I'm saying. I read some rumors about that, but I would not like that. But
I read the bad guy. Okay. Not Han Solo.
Well, I'm actually very intrigued about this, honestly, because I want to know. I kind of you kind of want to know how the Bothans died. What I mean, it's something that's good. That's not, like you said, Jedi related. Gives it kind of what Star Wars Rebels is kind of doing. I mean, minus the Jedi, but it's starting to introduce the Rebel Alliance and everything like that, and the people who aren't Jedis. So I'm kind of interested in that aspect of it. But I like Gareth Edwards. I think he will do a good job. And as that you were talking, someone leaked the trailer for it. I haven't watched it yet. Okay. But it's on Movie Web if you want to check it out. Did you say you saw it or you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't. I didn't know it leaked.
Okay, yeah, it literally just leaked. So that we'll have to probably check that out after this is over.
I think the again, it's good to explore the world, but I think we say what you want about the prequels, but they were at least felt like they were essential to the overall arc. Now, how the story was done is one thing, but nonetheless, I'm worried that we're going to get maybe Star Wars overload. I'm hoping that Disney tries to tamp that down enough that if they're going to do these anthology movies, they just do three, which is what the plan is right now, as opposed to every other year, like Marvel, we get a new Star Wars movie. I don't want that. I want there to be the true, like, pinnacle legendary films, not just a bunch of them that keep coming out.
Yeah. Or if they do that, then let them have a TV show. I'd rather have a TV show.
I would agree with that also, just because I've never seen that in a live action. Yeah. That's something that's so true. New.
I'd rather have a TV show than a Star Wars movie, like you're saying, every other year. I'm okay with the three, in between the three movies that are coming out. I'm okay with that. And after that, give me
a
TV
show. That's not going to be it. Like, you know.
I know, but give me a TV show, or give me a TV show in between of something, because I still want that TV show of 1313, that underworld. I want that show. I wanted the Mandalorians and the bounty hunters and all that. I want that.
I mean, I would kill for a show on Coruscant, which might be my favorite planet. I just love the design of it and everything, and I would kill to see that. Yeah.
Didn't the bounty hunter game take place on Coruscant?
It was supposed to. It was supposed to be 1313.
Yeah.
But they axed it, which really pissed me off because it looked so beautiful.
But there was that time where the rumors were had that there were over 100 scripts written of the show that was going to be like on Coruscant. That was going to take place on like the sort of criminal element of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, and like put that on after directly after the new Star Trek show. Because, you know, that's happening. Allegedly.
Yeah, because if Star Trek's going to happen, you have to think Star Wars is going to happen.
So,
in my opinion.
But I would definitely be okay with a Star Wars show. I would at least watch the pilot. I don't know if I can commit to more than that until I see the pilot, but
yeah.
I would definitely be happy about it.
That's a tough one to do just because it's so like visually, you know, heavy.
I mean, they did a great job with the Clone Wars, and they're doing a great job with Rebels. I mean, just translate that into live action. I mean, yeah, it's easier said than done, but I think it's trickier. I think they could do it.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going for a new Star Trek, then it's definitely a possibility. The trick is going to be finding some sort of premise that'll make sense and be good and fit into the Star Wars universe without treading on any of the movies. As long as they don't try to do an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and be like, hey, look, this is part of the series or part of the universe every like 5 minutes just to make sure you don't forget. Like, yeah, that's not the right way to do it. So, yeah, definitely good that we're getting news. Not sure how it'll go. Definitely excited for it because Godzilla was amazing.
Yes.
So, all right, moving on to my news, not Star Wars related, closer to Marvel related, but not even really that. Joss Whedon did a movie a few years ago called Cabin in the Woods, and some guy in about 2006 self-published a novel about a group of students who go to a cabin in the woods and fight monsters and stuff, and then it's revealed that it's being controlled by some mysterious organization. Kind of like that plot of that Cabin in the Woods movie that everyone loves because it's amazing. So, yeah, they're being sued over it, and that's crazy. Judging by the article, and it sounds like a reasonable complaint. I have not read the book. It makes me want to read the book, so suing him at the very least is a very good publicity move.
Uh-huh.
So mostly I just kind of wanted to bring it up because it's going to be fun to watch. It's kind of the first copyright thing that I've come across that I've actually been kind of interested in that's been somewhat mainstream.
I did see that. I didn't read the whole article, but I did see that, and it was interesting. So he said, so it's basically 2006 he wrote this?
Yeah. Which this movie was completed in late 2008 at the earliest. I remember reading about it in my freshman year dorm room. So that, wow, I just gave away my age roughly, but that's okay. I'm younger than I seem sometimes. But yeah, so timeline works out in just the right way that it's a possibility. And since he self-published it and sold it on Venice Beach Boardwalk, which is in Santa Monica, where, you know, the Hollywood is, especially Lionsgate, specifically. So, like, it sounds kind of like, hey, look at me, I'm part of this, but I don't know. Again, it's just believable enough that like it's going to be interesting.
I've read about this, and I think what will probably happen is they'll just end up settling because neither side can prove either way. It's too vague. The ending is completely different. But it's also close enough that you could hypothetically make the art. I mean, the concept. I mean, if you really wanted, you could be like, yeah, but the concept they took, and there's really no way to prove for or against that.
Yeah. But you also can't copyright an idea. So, like, I don't know. Like, there's defense for it, but Joss has all sorts of money. Lionsgate, I guess, kind of might have money now. Part of the reason... Well, yeah, Lionsgate has money. the movie was in production hell for a while. I don't remember the details of it, but it was because somebody went bankrupt, and eventually it ended up at Lionsgate.
It was MGM because they went through all that shit with Bond and all the properties.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was both Red Dawn and Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, because I remember it being finished in like 2010 or 2009.
Yeah.
At least like when
it was
I say finished.
At least 2009.
It was like completely, like when I say 09, 2010, like I mean like completely finished, edited, everything.
Yeah.
And then sat for 2 years.
I think it was originally supposed to be released late 2009. Yeah, it's crazy. I imagine they're going to settle out of court as well. It's $10 million in damages is what they're asking for.
Right.
They'll probably get $5 million.
Yeah.
I'd be happy with $5 million.
I'd be happy with $1 million.
Yeah, definitely. I would too.
I also wrote a thing that was...
You know... I also wrote this trilogy about a boy... who grew up on a dust planet.
Yeah.
And he had these
blows up
abilities.
A giant bowling ball or something.
Yeah. And he had a father who was this evil guy. He had these laser swords. You know. Beautiful. Maybe I should do something about that.
I wrote a book called House in the Meadow.
Whoa.
Whoa.
All right, so yeah, that's Cabin in the Woods news. Moving on to Star Wars news, because we haven't done that in a while. So, Tyler.
Well, as Andrew was saying, nothing else has been going on in this world except for Star Wars Celebration, obviously. And there were two trailers that were released this past week. One that I... will sadly admit that I cried a little tears of joy watching. And that would be for Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. A whole slew of new footage in this trailer. I'm assuming you both have seen this. If you haven't, then I don't know why you're doing this podcast. Unless your name's George Lucas, who apparently doesn't give a crap about anything Star Wars related anymore. But yeah, you got to see everybody almost. You got to see Rey, you got to see Finn, Kylo Ren. Mark Hamill is narrating the voiceover. You get to see Oscar Isaac as Poe Dameron, the Chrome Trooper. Not Storm, not Chrome. And also an older Chewie and an older Han Solo. Let's talk about this trailer really quick. What were your guys' thoughts on it? I mean, to me, this trailer, I think Star Wars is going to live up to the hype. I think it's going to be just something special. What about you guys?
This trailer was what they needed to put out for this movie. Like, the first one just felt like, hey, look, this would be a cool fan-made trailer. Like, this is what I want to see in Star Wars Episode 7. And then this one was like, hey, this is what you're actually going to see in Episode 7, and it's going to be great. Yeah, super excited after seeing this.
Was I the only one who did not hear that?
No, I didn't hear it either.
Wonderful. That's weird. Okay.
You want to do a take two on that, or did you
take
get it?
Take two. Or did you get it?
I mean, yeah, mine and recorded it.
Okay.
Can you
That's
hear
fine.
Me now?
I can.
Weird. So I just cut out for a bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it sounded like you were very excited about the film,
the
trailer.
Yeah. This is what they should have put out the first time.
Yeah.
Where it basically ended.
What about you, Andrew? What do you think?
I actually love the first trailer. I just thought I mean, the first trailer was different. It was really, I mean, it felt like, it didn't really feel like Star Wars necessarily. It was much darker. A lot of the camera movements were things we hadn't really seen before. I think that was really, the first trailer was almost like a way to say, this is all new. You don't see any, all you see is the new characters. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of putting a mark in the, a line in the sand to say, like, here's something new and different and interesting. And then this is the one that really felt like Star Wars. Tonally, all the sort of iconography. And I mean, as much as I like the first trailer, this one was just, I mean, the best compliment I can say is it felt like it never left, which is, I think, the biggest worry I've had of them doing sequels at all. And I've said this on the podcast before, is that it won't feel necessary. It'll feel like somebody just said, hey, we should have more Star Wars movies, as opposed to this is a true continuation. Like, I want it to be able for people in 30 years to be able to look back at them and say this was essential to the saga, as opposed to just sequels that they made. And I think the trailer is so confident and hits its mark so well and does such a good job at merging the old with the new and playing to the nostalgia, but also making it feel real and not like just fan fiction, that, I mean, I was nothing but smiles the entire time. I just had a giant big grin on my face through the entire trailer, and it's paced so well, the way the music flows, and then that final scene is just, I mean, think about that, what that final scene does. The first trailer was very much all, here are the new characters, and then the final trailer, you hear that final scene, and he says, you know, we're home, which is basically a message to the fans, one, that Star Wars is back, and two, we've come back to what Star Wars really is, as opposed to what the prequels did. You know, this is the true continuation of the franchise that we all loved, that we felt had left us from the prequels, and it is back. And it was real. I mean, it's hard to describe how powerful that final shot was, especially that if you see the way they're framed, it's very similar to a shot from the first Star Wars that was in a lot of publicity, where it's Han with the gun to the right and Chewie to the left. I mean, clearly that it's a direct reference to that framing, the way they're standing.
Yeah. And Chewie didn't really age much, not growing any gray hair. Wookiees must just age really, really well.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, I mean, Harrison Ford actually looked pretty damn good.
He looked awesome.
And I think somebody said in some article, it's like, he even sounds happy, which might be JJ's greatest trick of all. and it's true. I mean, seeing him smile almost makes you like, oh, even Harrison is on board. Makes you be like, wow, this is really something.
Who out of all three of those, was the biggest skeptic of them all.
He just didn't give a shit.
No, he didn't. But I think, and like you were saying, this was a necessary sequel. This was a necessary continuation that they needed. And I mean, just the visuals were amazing. That first 2 seconds of that Star Destroyer in the sand, like, holy shit, how cool was that? And then, man, and then Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, voicing over everything and saying, my sister has it, I have it, you have it. Like, who do you think is he talking to?
Son/daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't think he's talking to Finn?
I'd be very upset if it's not a blood relative.
Yeah. Okay. Doesn't he say, like, my father had it, I have it? Like,
yeah. My sister has it.
Some shit where it's like, anyone can have it, and you're not, just don't happen to be related to me, but you're the new one. I would not like that.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the twist. But I don't know. I mean, they might not even be his kid. It could be Han and Leia's kid.
But well, it felt to me like grandfather was the subtext, the implied thing.
Right. Yes, I agree with you. That would be my first thought.
So you're thinking it's Luke's kid?
That, or Andrew brings up a good point that it could be Leia's kid.
Okay. And some are saying that's Finn, that the Black Stormtrooper. But there was a costume that I saw of concept art of him with a lightsaber on his holster. But from what we've known or what we've heard, that Finn actually finds Luke's lightsaber, and so that's probably why he's holding it on his costume.
I
And
think it. I would put all. If like I, if I was a betting man, I would put all my money on that it's Rey, simply
okay.
because she's female,
Yeah.
and they're making a concerted effort to make that matter because there's such a lack of strong female characters in those
And
movies.
I have no problem whatsoever. As long as she's a good character and someone I can get behind. Because, a lot of films try to make these female lead roles, and I think they overdo it. You don't have to overdo it. You just have to have a good background, a good character, and I'm all aboard. I have no problem with female or male characters as long as they're good.
Yeah, don't bask in the fact that you have a female character. Don't like flaunt it. Be like, hey, look, this is awesome because, female lead.
Yeah,
like
also,
make
a
Paul Feig,
good
what he
character.
does. Paul Feig is great at it.
Also, there's some, I mean, we know a little bit because from the interviews at the celebration that she's been living on that planet. And so it's like we have another character who's living on a desert planet, scrounging, probably looking up to the stars and wanting more. I mean, it's perfect. It's exact, I'm kind of surprised it's not on Tatooine. I think it's kind of silly that he went to another planet, but
I think it's
whatever.
Jakku. Jakku might be the
Yeah, but it's
planet.
like you can't. I mean, part of me is like you can't have another snow planet and go, "Oh, this giant snow planet? Oh, that's not Hoth. That's Rakeem."
Hey, Hoth is my favorite planet. That Hoth battle, I'm excited about it. But yeah, I think we've probably talked enough about it. For the Star Wars trailer, and then Star Wars Battlefront looks amazing. I'll just throw that out there. If you're an Xbox One, PS4
So
owner.
excited for that.
What?
So excited. I love those
Oh,
games.
yeah. Definitely pre-order it as soon as possible. But okay, let's get on to the next one. Now this trailer, I'm still skeptical on this movie. It's Batman versus Superman. It got leaked, and then literally the same day they decided, oh, we're gonna release it, which I'm probably thinking it was a stunt. It had to have been a stunt because people were reacting so much to Star Wars that someone leaked it, and then they decided, oh, we're gonna release the trailer. But I'm still not sold on this movie. My reaction, my thoughts on their, which I'm okay with. I think they're going into an Injustice storyline, which I'm okay with, and also kind of like a mix with a Dark Knight Returns Frank Miller comic book. But it's just, I can't get over Batman's voice. It was really pissing me off listening to it. I like Ben Affleck. I think he's going to be a good Batman, but I think they're trying too hard in this movie to try to start something new. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm not ready to be excited about this movie yet. It's too far out. But yeah, the trailer didn't do anything super exciting for me. It kind of just expanded on the one image of Batman with glowy eyes and Superman like staring at him while floating. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't speak to the contents just because we really know nothing about it so far.
Yeah.
There's very little we know about what the story is. And I mean, I think there is real dramatics to be played by between the trio of Superman, Lex Luthor, and Batman, especially if they're going off, and it seems like they are, the sort of backlash of Man of Steel. Because it almost becomes like meta in that way, the backlash from the fan base, and to sort of put that in the narratives, I think is an interesting sort of way to go about it. The thing that the trailer did not really made me feel is I'm in no way excited for the look of the movie. It looks like crap. It's so heavily CGI'd, and I mean that shot with him in the glowy eyes looks like something from a video game of 2003,
Yeah.
and it just like again content I can't speak to it, but looking like the way it looks, the way that Snyder's shooting it looks really bad, like really really bad.
I can't get over that. Do you bleed?
Yeah, and his voice is terrible. Yeah,
That's not a Batman voice. Like,
it's automated. It's like it's going through a speaker.
Yeah, and fucking, what? I don't want Christian Bale's voice again. I don't want, where is she? You know,
Would argue that having it be electronically modulated is better than, hey, look, I'm Batman. At least as far as Christian Bale went. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Nothing about this movie was like, oh man, I have to see this movie right now. Which is what a teaser trailer should do.
Yeah. It the exact opposite of what the Star Wars trailer did.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some Easter eggs in it that I noticed. There was the Riddler question mark on a pillar that I saw. But, I mean, other than that, I'm not excited for it yet. It's just, I don't know. But, I mean, that fight could be literally, like, 10 minutes of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then, because they're trying to Dawn of Justice, and they're saying that's a setup for Justice League. And they're also saying that Cyborg, Flash, and everyone else is going to show up in this movie. So, you know, where the hell are you going to put them if you're trying to make it this huge conflict of Batman versus Superman? What the hell? I don't know. I'm not excited for it. Not yet. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't give it my all yet.
All right. Just before we move on, I just stumbled across something on the interwebs that is the Star Wars 7 drinking game. There is one rule, and it is have a shot every time a lens flare effect is used. So, on that
that's the,
note,
that's the only rule?
There's not going to be many.
I don't think there will be many. I think J.J. Abrams realized, hey, my Lair Flynn's, I mean, it's good, but it doesn't belong in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. It's just funny that people are like,
no, I like it. I like it.
Hilarious.
But I will drink it. How about this? I will go to a movie theater that serves alcohol, and I'll say, I want 5 shots, just 5, because I'm hoping there's not going to be more than that. But every time there's a lens flare, I will take a shot.
I think
in preparation.
Really quickly, I think the credit to what JJ is doing, and I think it shows in the trailer. And from what I've read about how he is on set and the way he's handled everything, I think maybe the greatest thing that he's done is he said to the people who are doing the movie, hey, this isn't my movie. This isn't your movie. This is for Star Wars people. Imagine if you were given his job. You have to make a sequel to the most beloved franchise of all time. And I feel like if you try to fight that massiveness, you'll lose. So I think it's smart that he leaned into it. And he's like, you know what? You're right. This is bigger than me. And I'm not going to act like this is my vision. We are in holy hallowed ground. All of us, the actors, the set designers, and me as a director, and we're just here to serve Star Wars. And I think that's a great way to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want it any other way. And if this man can make me love Force Awakens more than Empire Strikes Back, then
that won't happen.
It probably won't happen. But if he can get it to a close second, then I will forever be a J.J. Abrams lover of his work. I mean, I already am, but he probably might be my favorite director.
Yes.
So, I mean, if he can pull that off, I mean, you guys know how much I love Star Wars and how excited I have been for this film. So, yeah, I don't know. Star Wars all the way.
Ooh.
All right, now on to our feature presentations. Of course, as we said, we are doing Oscar-nominated animated features. Huh. We're gonna go chronologically. My choice was going to be Spirited Away, but I could not find that DVD, and the digital copy that I have is non-existent or wasn't working properly. So I went with my second choice of Howl's Moving Castle. When deciding which one to do, I kind of had a toss-up between wanting to watch Fantastic Mr. Fox again, because that's a hilarious movie, and something Miyazaki. And I was feeling more Miyazaki, and Spirited Away seemed like a good one, but it didn't work out that way. So I watched Howl's Moving Castle, and this came out in 2004. Was up against Corpse Bride and Wallace and Gromit: The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, which won for Best Animated Feature in 2005. So, yeah, this is a Miyazaki film, obviously, and it is based on a book, which I did not know of. And it's about, let's see, what's a good way to describe it? It feels... It's a big fantasy adventure movie that feels at times like a Wizard of Oz kind of adventure, but not, a little more ridiculous. Somewhere between Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland, I would say, to go with classics. And it stars Emily Mortimer and Gene Simmons, probably not from Kiss. As Sophie, who is the main character, she gets transformed into an old version of herself due to a curse by a wicked witch who is in love with Howl, played by Christian Bale, and is trying to win back his affections. Meanwhile, this prince from a neighboring country goes missing, and so the neighboring country declares war on this country. I forget what the country is called. But yeah, so there's this war going on while Sophie is trying to get this curse lifted off of her and meets up with Howl and in his moving castle with the fire demon Calcifer, voiced by Billy Crystal, and the little boy servant dude Markle, voiced by Josh Hutcherson. So... yeah, that's probably way more information than anyone needs, because if you've seen it, you've seen it and know most of these things, and if you haven't, then you can look it up. Yeah, it's a Miyazaki film, so it's really gorgeous. It's pretty intense at times, and very, very... this one is very out there and strange. Hence the Alice in Wonderland kind of vibe to it. But yeah, it's a great adventure movie. I enjoyed it immensely. This is probably my fourth time watching it. Why do I love it? It's, I don't know, it's just a lot of fun. I don't feel like there's a giant, overwhelmingly good moral to it, other than, you know, you can be happy even if you're not pretty. It's kind of the driving force that comes up. Yeah, I don't know. Have you guys seen this one?
I have not.
I have. Haven't seen it since I saw it, though.
Yeah.
When did this come out? Like 06?
04.
Yeah, I don't have much memory of it. I remember enjoying it. I remember it paling in comparison to Spirited Away.
Yeah.
Which is just a out and out masterpiece. That being said, I probably knocked it a little too hard just because it wasn't as good as that. So I mean, all of his movies are... I've actually haven't seen as many as I should. But I mean, it's Miyazaki. You can't really go wrong. He pretty much always hits it out of the park, or at least really close. He does Wonder better than pretty much any animator. I remember with Howl's, it's a the the sort of magical realism that he works with is great. Like, I feel it's both fantasy, but it feels like it's fantasy in our world. Like, it could be out there.
Exactly. He does a great job of mixing the fantasy with the real, like you said. This movie's a little weird because they don't really... They need another, like, 5 or 10 minutes to help set up the magical rules of the world. Like, Howl, you don't really understand where he comes from or, you know, anything about the witches or the wizards. There's some stuff that's clearly left unspoken, so that kind of brings it down. I could definitely see not enjoying it as much as another one. I believe this was the first Miyazaki film I watched. For some reason, I didn't see Spirited Away when it came out. So, actually, I don't think I saw any Miyazaki film until about 2011 when I went to Australia. And then borrowed all of them from a friend. So, if you like Miyazaki, check it out. If you don't like Miyazaki, then why are you listening to our podcast? If you won't like just really good animation and magical realism that's brilliantly done, then check this movie out. I don't know. I'm at a loss for things to say about it. It's very good, but it's hard to talk about because it's so strange.
It's very opaque from what I remember about it.
The voice acting is pretty good. Christian Bale as Howl is surprisingly well-ranged. It's not something I've seen from him in a single movie, I don't think. Trying to think of his other movies, but yeah, nothing comes to mind. Billy Crystal is Billy Crystal. Can't go wrong with that.
Nope.
Emily Mortimer, an example of the rules not being explicit is the main character Sophie gets transformed by a witch into an older version, like a 90-year-old woman. And somewhere throughout the movie, she gets changed back, but her hair color stays the same. But before she gets changed back indefinitely, there's moments where, like, if she gets really emotional, her face will go back to the normal, you know, teenage version of herself. And it's not super clear, like, when that happens. So it's kind of really strange.
I don't remember that mattering, though. I think, like, when you have something where the main point of it is that there's some other force or magic out there, I think if you define it too much, it kind of loses the specialness. I think there's enough there to figure it out. Like, I vaguely remember that, and it's sort of like judged somewhat by her emotion. When you have subject matter like he does, that deals with the essential idea that there's magic and a sort of life force and beautiful sort of spiritual elements all around us, it's better to not define it strictly with rules, just because once you do that, you kind of put it in a box. So yeah, logically, you might not be able to pinpoint how does this work, but thematically and emotionally, I don't remember there being any problems with the sort of rules or how it, and if you pay attention close enough, I think you get what he's going for, even if it doesn't work. Like, wait a minute, that doesn't make extreme logical sense.
Yeah,
what everything's doing, and he always works in that sort of ambiguous sort of everything's has an energy and is working in different ways with all of his movies. He's very into that Eastern philosophy, like sort of any. I think I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure if he's done a single movie that doesn't have some form of magic in it.
Yeah, I doubt it. Whisper of His Heart is probably the one that I know that he is, like, the most grounded, but there is still some magical elements to that.
Yeah, The Wind Rises is pretty, pretty almost completely empty of magic, but there's still this sort of feeling amongst it that there's something more out. Like, he's very into sort of the magic of, if not something truly magical, then the magic of sort of the experience of living and the beauty in the environment and among people and whatnot.
Yeah.
And he's retired, which sucks, but he's old.
Yeah, and he's left behind some fantastic movies, so it's not like he quit too soon or anything. Like, it would be great if he kept making movies, but he's been around for 30 years, 35 years-ish. So, yeah, he's great. And that's partially why I chose Miyazaki, is like, how can you discuss animated features without talking about Miyazaki? Just wouldn't seem right. So, yeah. Great movie. Go watch it. Howl's Moving Castle.
I plan on it.
All right.
I like him.
Moving up a year or two to Andrew's pick.
Well, it's funny you picked Miyazaki, because I think it's appropriate that you did, since we're talking about, like you said, you're talking about animation. He's a pillar of it. And I think my movie is also a pillar of the more modern form of animation, which is heavily, I mean, in many, many interviews, Pixar has said that Miyazaki is a heavy influence on all of them, especially Lasseter, who started it, in that animation can be fun, sure, but can also really be beautiful. And you can really tell deep stories with deep themes and emotional characters. It doesn't just have to be children-based, basically. It can be for everybody. It can speak the greater truths. And my pick is, I think, one of Pixar's greatest films, and that's WALL-E, which came out in 2008, directed by Andrew Stanton. Pixar, I mean, there's not much more you can say about Pixar. I mean, disregarding the sort of slope they've been in since, I would say, post Toy Story 3. Before that, they had one of the greatest runs of any filmmaking company in the history of film. From pretty much from Toy Story to Toy Story 3, they've produced nothing but classics, from high classics to maybe just movies that were good to really good, like Cars, which, again, is just good. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everyone has a good movie. But the majority of their films are just straight-up classics. And WALL-E, I think, stands as at the very front of that class. Anyone hasn't seen it, you know, it's a heavy sci-fi mixed with humanism film that focuses on this. Basically, the Earth has been ransacked with debris and trash, and humans had to leave it and have been gone from it for thousands of years. And we follow this trash compactor robot who is alone on Earth. And basically, there are a lot of great themes about the sort of environmentalism and a very scary depiction of what might occur of the human race. It's actually one of the most harrowing and possibly truthful, I think, depictions of a post-apocalyptic sort of society, which is weird because it's animated, but it just shows how good Pixar is. But really, it's not about that. Ultimately, it's about the thing that defines humanity, which is love and emotion and feeling. And I mean, the idea of a robot feeling has been done before, but I'm not sure if it's ever been done this poetically before. The fact that he can't really talk makes it almost like a silent movie. I mean, it's famous mostly for the first 30, 40 minutes of almost no dialogue. And Pixar is just a company that, though, again, disregarding what they've been doing recently, was never afraid to take risks. And this movie is just full of them. And it's shocking for me to say that one of the greatest love stories I've ever seen on film is between two machines. And yet it's done in such a way that it really teaches you what matters in the connection between two souls and within people. And it's also beyond that an incredibly good looking film. The art design on it is just, it's almost too incredible for me to even describe, just because it's so meticulous and it's so impactful. It's almost like Stanley Kubrick, how sort of evocative it is. And the arc of the story is perfect. I mean, I won't get it. If you haven't seen it, go see it, because there's a lot of different twists and turns, and I'd rather not talk about exactly what happens. But to say that it's both a very layered movie and also one that discusses the simple aspects of what makes life so important. And it's really one of, when I think of it, I think of beauty. And it's one of the most beautiful and moving movies I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I love WALL-E. I had not seen it when it first came out. I think I saw it a couple years later, and I don't know why I didn't. But when I finally watched it, I loved it. It definitely got my list of top Pixar movies that have come out. I mean, like you said, Pixar really has never made a bad movie. Minus like Cars 2 or something, which I don't like to count. But they have a track record of making beautiful, well done, well written films, which I'm really excited for the new movie that they're coming out with, Inside Out.
Oh, so good looking.
Yeah.
It looks amazing, and it's going somewhere that I don't think a lot of films have ever gone before. For the fact that just they're dealing with emotions and like the human anatomy and everything, and like the psyche of a human and everything like that, which that's going to be awesome. And for young kids to be able to experience that and understand that is really cool too. And that's me being a psych major. And
it's funny you said emotions. I think that's what Pixar excels at more than any other animation, is that there are these deeply emotional moments that reach anyone of any age. And I think every one of their movies has one of those moments, if not many of those moments.
Toy Story 3, you know, that if that final 10 minutes didn't make you cry, then
yep,
I don't know what kind of person you are.
Yeah,
I mean, for any age.
We are also the perfect age for the Toy Story movies, because
that's true.
It followed our lives. They came out. And then that third one was just perfect of like, hey, look, he's going off to college, you know, like we've mm-hmm. all done in the last few years or so. So, yeah, that our view might be slightly skewed, but it's definitely a fact that these movies are all great and definitely have those emotional moments. I once read a really interesting comparison of Pixar and DreamWorks, where it basically boiled it down to that Pixar is the nice little emotional center that they expand into a great movie. And DreamWorks kind of goes from the other end and starts with this big action adventure and then pulls a story out of it. And if you look at all of their movies, that is exactly the difference. Like, sometimes you just need the giant adventure of How to Train Your Dragon. But then WALL-E comes out, and it's like, this is about a robot that doesn't say anything. And yet, he is more emotional than Kristen Stewart in any movie she's ever been in. Or at least the Twilight movies, which made way more money. yeah. I mean, we've talked Kristen Stewart before, and that was a fun episode.
That was a very fun episode.
I was going to say we were dragging her into this, just beating her again.
No. She is actually really good. She just got screwed over by being in the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
Screwed over with all that lovable money.
Money talks, man.
I'll just say one last thing in terms of a specific in the movie that I think depicts how good Pixar is. Sometimes they can take the simplest things and wring the most truthful emotions out of it. And the thing that sticks to me about WALL-E is the idea of touch, the idea of touching hands, and how I don't think before WALL-E, I've never considered how incredibly intimate that can be.
Yeah.
And WALL-E focuses it in such a heart-wrenching and beautiful way. It completely opened my eyes to it in a It's like I'd seen it in a completely new fashion, a new vision for this connection between humans. And it's so beautiful that it's a recurring motif of the hands touching.
I'll tell you. Oh, yeah. Sorry. You know, Oh, sorry. Are you?
I'm done.
Okay. What I was going to say, I mean, just what a handhold can do, really, to anybody. I mean, that's why you see a lot of, I mean, you see couples holding hands. It's that connection you have. And to see that in the film between two robots, like you were saying, it's like, wow. Because you never really expect two robots or two inanimate objects to feel, you know what I mean? And just what a handhold can do, a lot of things, just touching of another human being can release all these expressions and these emotions that you've never felt before. So, but no, yeah, WALL-E, great movie. I love WALL-E.
Yeah.
One of my friends, he has a cardboard cutout of like a 3D WALL-E.
Nice.
That he got from a movie theater. So, and it's at his house, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So. I have a fairly intimate relationship with this movie because this is a movie that my wife and I saw like our first summer together.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we ended up seeing it at a drive-in paired with The Incredible Hulk, if that sounds right. So, kind of a terrible mix, but yeah, it is a great movie, and it's kind of been one of our movies ever since. So,
well, it's a good movie to be your movie.
But right? Isn't that perfect that it becomes more than a movie that way? It's speaking to something that's deeper in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the thing that it can do.
Yeah, yep. And it's the perfect animated movie to, you know, have. Like you said, Andrew, it's one of the best love stories on film. You wanted to use it for the love story episode we did.
Right, yeah.
Which probably was part of the instigation for doing this animated episode, if I remember correctly. So, there you go. You get to talk about it.
Yay.
America.
America.
Sweet. Yeah, great movie. Let's move on to a slightly less great movie.
Slightly? Okay. I'll get all
right. It's hard to beat WALL-E.
I know. Fine. How about this is the best, I think this is the best Disney animated film. Disney Animated Studios. Or whatever they're.
I mean, that's a tall order.
Well, no, okay, no. Or what? Isn't this a different? Or is I thought this was a different subsidiary of the Disney Animation.
If you think this is better than Wreck-It Ralph, I will fight you.
Don't you put that on me? Don't you put that on me, Ricky Bobby?
All right.
Okay. Well, speaking of my movie, I did Big Hero 6. As you guys have listened to the podcast before, I love this movie. This was a great, fantastic movie. It was directed by Don Hall and Chris Williams, the same people who did Wreck-It Ralph, or the same studio who did Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen. Little quick synopsis of just to not give anything away in the film. Robotics nerd Hiro Hamada discovers an inflatable healthcare robot named Baymax created in the past by his brother Tadashi. After a terrible life-changing accident, Hiro and Baymax team up with four other nerds and save their hometown, San Francisco, from an evil supervillain trying to take over Hiro's invention. It stars TJ Miller, newcomer Ryan Potter, Scott Adsit. If you've ever seen 30 Rock, he plays Liz Lemon's producer, Jamie Chung, Damon Wayans Jr., Genesis Rodriguez, Alan Tudyk, and James Cromwell. It's got a really good voice cast, actually, in it.
Yep.
This movie came out last year. It won the Oscar for Best Animated Film, which, still in my opinion, if Lego Movie had gotten nominated, it would have won, but Big Hero 6 was just as good as Lego Movie, in my opinion. But I had really never. This is actually based off a comic book series called Big Hero 6.
I think or, inspired by is a better word. I don't inspired think by it's very
Marvel, close. Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah it I, Marvel, just, I don't yeah. think it's very close to the source material. I have not read it, but that is what yeah, I've
heard. I haven't read it, but I'll go with that. It's inspired by a comic book by Marvel of the same name. Basically Hero he's this young kid who lives with his aunt because his parents his aunt Cass, played by Maya Rudolph, with his brother, and he's this very very smart kid, and he has these abilities to be a super genius and build all these robotics, and it's just a fun movie all around. It's kind of got everything that you want, minus kind of a love story. But it's got loss, it's got gains, it has friendships, and it was just a well done film. Voice acting was fantastic. Baymax is probably one of my favorite characters in the film.
Scott probably has one of my favorite characters of last year. In film,
you would go that far? Okay,
one of that. top one of 20, definitely, maybe top 10.
Okay, who's your number one?
I don't know.
Okay, but it takes place in this fictional world, as I was saying, San Francisco, which is I kind of like the concept as the integration of Japan and California, because if you think about it, they're really not too far from each other. So you probably have a lot of immigrants at this time who came over, and I just like the concept itself. Visually, it was a very well done film, and I love superhero movies, superhero stuff. I love just all that all around. I've always grown up watching cartoons, attempting to read comics. I need to read more comics in my life. And you know, it's just it's funny, it's great. In my opinion, I didn't think there was a lot of things wrong with this film, because it could relate to all ages. Like I said, there was a lot of loss in this film. One of the main villain decided he wanted to take out one guy to save another person, and to just it with no consequences. Kind of lost my train of thought, but no, I mean, I'm assuming you both have seen this movie.
Yes,
because we've talked about it. What things did you guys like about the film?
Most everything. It was very very gorgeous, and yeah, it's a beautiful beautiful movie. I talked about adventure and heart, and this movie definitely has both. I think it handles the heart side of things better, personally. But yeah.
Yeah, and the relationship between Hero and Baymax was definitely one of my favorite things about it. He, after losing his brother, he kind of shunned the world, and the last thing that his brother ever did ended up being the best thing that ever happened to him. Or one of the best things that ever happened to get him out of that depressive state and to gain the friends that Tadashi had at the university, which I thought was cool. And then TJ Miller, I love that man. I don't know if I've talked about it before, like I've met him and seen his stand-ups and had a nice conversation with him. That guy's awesome. He is so funny. And him as Fred was awesome. And both Damon Wayans Jr., he's funny. Everybody, I thought the voice acting was fantastic as well. Like I said, there was nothing that I could nitpick at this film at all. So
I think it's fine. None of it really hit that well to me. I'll give an example. As much as I like Baymax as a character, the relationship between him and Hero just really didn't resonate enough with me that when, okay, we're not doing spoilers, so never mind. I'll just say it didn't really resonate with me enough. I think a big part of that is the fact that Baymax doesn't really have any emotions. And so you can never really establish a true connection between the two characters because he really is a true robot. He has, you never see him, he's very much programmed to feel one thing.
But I think
And
I,
he's
to.
fairly one note. And because of that, I just couldn't buy the connection between, I couldn't buy what he really gave Hero. I get that he got him out of the house, but I didn't feel much of an emotional connection between them because he can't really provide one.
Yeah, but I think towards the end of the film, I think you see Baymax attempting to understand what the hero's going through and what he's. I think he's learning. I think he had that ability to learn what's going on and to react to that, without getting too much into spoilers. I think that's what was happening towards the end. Because because Hero had messed with his chip, and I think, and I mean, he taught him how to fight and everything, so he could learn. He had the ability to learn. So I think as the film progressed, he was learning and understanding what was going on. Especially like with one of the fight scenes. But I mean, I see where your point is. But in my opinion, in my mind, I think Baymax was attempting to learn and to go and
To harness
be,
Tadashi.
yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, because Tadashi taught him and created him, and he learned a lot from Tadashi. Yeah. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
it definitely didn't play that up too much, but that's kind of where I took it also.
And
But
also all the supporting characters were really underdeveloped.
that is
Also,
definitely true.
yeah. But that's why there's going to be Hero 6 too.
And also, it felt like they were juggling too many themes and didn't really knock any of them on the head like they should have. Like, for instance, the villain. So a big point of the movie is that is how to deal with the idea of loss, and that the villain deals with it very, very badly. I won't go into
Yeah.
spoilers, but he experiences his own form of loss, and he deals with it with violence and anger. And what the movie's trying to say is, Hero should not deal with it in that way because he tries to have Baymax be a weapon and whatnot. But for the first half of the movie, it's not like he's an angry person. You don't see him. That only comes later, and it feels convoluted. It's only been brought in because of the scenario that's been created. When we first see him, yes, he's in his room and he's all tucking away from the world, but he's not angry. We don't see him angry and like that being a major part of his identity. And so when he's finally able to let go or whatever and realize it's okay, you don't have to be angry, it's like, well, that wasn't really his journey. You kind of just made his journey halfway through the movie once you discover what the villain's motives were. You kind of get what I'm saying? It just was, they didn't. I get the idea that Baymax pulled him out of the sadness, but I mean, the main theme that they try to bring on it, like I said, is this idea of not having anger. And I didn't feel that anger from him.
Yeah.
It only came in later, and it felt very much like this is where the plot needs him to be angry. And so here we go. We'll have this secret come out, and he'll get angry.
To use your excuse from earlier, where I don't think that mattered. Like, yeah, it's one of those things where if you really think about it, it kind of hurts the movie a little bit, but while watching that movie, I never felt like, oh, this part seems underdeveloped. This came out of nowhere. It felt right in the moment. Looking back on it, yeah, definitely could have been done better at parts, but it in the moment of watching the movie, it was great.
I
I
guess
loved.
basically it comes down to summary. I just didn't feel it like you guys did.
Yeah,
Like
and that's
face
totally
level,
fine.
it just didn't hit me the way that it hit you guys.
That's fine. I mean, we're not all the same people. If we were, then this podcast would be very, very boring.
Hey, you like this movie? Yeah, me too. Great. See you next week.
I'm fine with it. I enjoyed it. I will forget about it in years to come, and I probably won't revisit it. But that's just me.
Okay, and that's fine. and you feel strongly more about Wally than, say, another person would, you know? So, yes. I mean, and like I said, we're not here to criticize anybody. We're here to give our own opinions, and that's fine.
Except for totally Andrew. Cool with that. We're all here to criticize Andrew. Slacker.
Suck, Andrew. But no, I personally love Big Hero 6. I saw it with my dad when he came out when it came out, and my dad loved it. You know, my dad doesn't like a lot of films, a lot of movies. I mean, he likes action stuff, but he doesn't really like a lot of animated films, but he really enjoyed this animated film. And so that made me happy to be able to have that with my father, because, you know, Hero lost basically his father figure, and Baymax was his only thing left of that father figure, which he held on to eventually after being forced onto it, but it was a good forcefulness. So, I mean, that's what it resonated with me. So that's probably what made me like it.
And it does continue the streak they've had.
Yes.
I think they've really rebuilt their brand into a sizable, interesting brand that I wouldn't say can stand up to Pixar, but Pixar's gone down so much recently, maybe they can. But I definitely don't remember being excited for Disney movies this much since, you know, Tangled and Frozen and Wreck-It Ralph and this. So kudos to them for really getting their shit together and bringing John Lasseter in to clean house and do whatever he did.
I still haven't seen Tangled. I think that's the only one I haven't seen out of those four yet.
Oh, it's good.
It's underrated. People don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, it did a lot of things right that Frozen did right before Frozen did.
Well, I love Frozen, so I'm assuming I'd like Tangled.
Check it out.
Yeah.
I will for sure. But I think it's enough for Big Hero 6. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. Definitely a movie to check out and watch. By yourself, with family, with friends, I think you'd have a fun time watching it.
Yeah.
This isn't where I parked my car.
All right. Yep, I guess, well, Tyler, you're up.
Okay.
It gets down to you.
Well, that's fine. So last week I purchased Mortal Kombat X for the Xbox One. I am very happy with my decision of purchasing this game. It is very violent, very bloody, very gory, and I could deal without some of that stuff. But as a fighting game, there hasn't really been a good fighting game on Xbox, on the Xbox One, on this new generation of console, in my opinion. Killer Instinct really didn't do much for me. So I've kind of been – because the last best fighting games I've played have been Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and Injustice on Xbox 360, which I thought were fantastic games. And Mortal Kombat X kind of – I think it's the best Mortal Kombat game they have made since the series has started. You start out with 24 characters. They're adding four new characters as a DLC. One, Predator. You'll be able to fight as Predator. You'll be able to fight as Jason Voorhees, Tanya, and Tremor. I don't really know Tanya or Tremors, but
What?
it'd be kind of cool to fight as Predator. So I'm excited for that. But overall, the game's really, really good. If you have a Redbox or you can rent games at a store or something, definitely rent it. And buy it if it tickles your fancy. Another one, I got two more quick things. I saw Furious 7. I think it's the best one in the series. I loved it. It was a nonstop, action-packed, fun ride, and a great tribute to Paul Walker. Everything about that film, Kurt Russell was amazing in it. The Rock was also great in it. I think everything about that movie was great. Great action, great fight scenes, great stunt work. It's all around a great movie. Have you guys seen it yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Badass Cars 7 lives up to its name.
Yeah. So, did you guys like it?
Yeah. It's a
Pretty
Fast and the
good.
Furious movie.
I mean, for what it is, I thought it was the best one out of the series.
I definitely think Fast Five is clear and away the best one.
Okay. That's fair.
Fast
I
Five
mean,
is so good.
yeah, Fast Five is great. I agree. I mean, I would say Fast Five is definitely my second favorite, but after seeing Furious 7, it's just I was glued to watching the film the whole time. Like nothing really took my attention off.
I will say every single thing The Rock does is gold.
Oh, he's movie Viagra, dude. He literally any franchise he goes into, he just beefs it up and does enough fantastic. He's a very underrated actor. I've said it ever since I saw Pain and Gain, which I think is his
He's
best
fantastic
performance.
in that. Yeah.
I thought that was his best performance he's ever. And he was great in a movie called Faster, which I don't know if you saw Faster. The movie itself kind of sucked, but he was great in it.
I think the biggest kudos I can give to the Furious 7 is they made me feel for Paul Walker. And I mean, I've said it before, he's maybe one of the worst actors who's ever walked this earth. So the fact that I felt, sad, I mean, kudos to them. I mean, he is a man. I'm not trying to be an asshole, but at the same time, he's given me pretty much no, like, when he died, I was like, well, he's dead, I guess. So I had
Yeah.
no relationship with him because I think he was an awful actor. See, apparently very nice guy. And I think the movie did a very good job of taking it almost beyond the movie. It's almost like the end of the movie is like, you know what? We don't really give a shit about this movie. Let's just talk about Paul, which I think is the right call.
Well, that's
Yeah.
what it was. That they redid that scene, and all those people at the end of the movie on the beach are
Right.
actually talking about Paul. They're
And
not
I think
talking
that's the right
this.
call. I
And
think
I
he
thought
did
that
the
was fantastic. I'm so glad that they did that because I got the feels. I got the feels hard.
That last
Like,
shot was excellent. I'll get that
yes.
shot was like way more artful than I could ever expect from that movie.
Right.
Out of a Fast movie. Yeah. So yeah, Furious 7, definitely check out. And last thing, I'm a supporter of Super Troopers 2. I love Super Troopers 1, though, as it's stupid it is. I love those guys. They are very funny. So I'm excited to be a part of producing that movie. I consider myself an executive producer only though I only support it with like $30. I'm gonna say I'm a producer.
Do you get a DVD? Is that early code?
It was the digital copy of the
Gotcha.
film. Yeah. Because
Cool.
they weren't offering Blu-ray on that, so I was like, I might as well just take the digital copy.
Yeah. Weird.
Something out of it. So, yep, that's my stuff.
I just hope that this means that we're gonna stop quoting the first one,
I
and
agree.
start quoting the new one, because I'm tired of hearing those quotes.
He can't pull over any farther.
Yeah, he's already pulled over. We get it. All right.
My wife.
Good movie. Damn movie.
So, if you are like Tyler and you want to get into comics and read more comics, then this coming up soon is the first weekend in May, and the first Saturday in May is Free Comic Book Day. It's an annual event where the publishers put out a free comic book. Several, actually. So you go to your local comic store and pick up some comic books that don't cost you a thing, except for the minimal gas it takes to get there. But you should also buy other things, because they're local comic stores, and they're great, and you should support them. I would recommend the omnibus versions of the Bendis Malayev run or the Brubaker Lark run on Daredevil, so that you can read some excellent Daredevil stories that are not at all being told in the Daredevil Netflix show, which is what we will be talking about next week. So
hell yeah,
go watch that, go read some comics, go support your local comic stores, and pick up some free comics. That. Free comic book day.
You said that's the first weekend in May?
Yep, Saturday, May 2. I'll post do that a link in this page also.
After I see Age of Ultron, I will be going to do that.
Exactly. They have, let's see.
Is there a list of what's coming or what's going to be free?
Yeah, freecomicbookday.com, I think, has the list.
Okay.
They usually have like one-offs for Serenity and stuff, Buffy.
Okay.
The big two, DC and Marvel, usually have the intro to their big event that no one ever cares about because they usually suck. But yeah, there's usually some pretty solid gold in there. There's a couple I'm really excited about, but I don't have the list in front of me, so I don't remember what they are. Well, but yeah, check out the link below and go support your comic stores.
Oh, I definitely will. Like I was telling you a couple weeks ago when I was at that comic book store, it's a nice little comic book store that I hadn't walked into ever since I moved here, but I made the right decision and going there. It's a cool little place, man. Never really got into going to comic book store because I felt like, oh, that might not be for me, because I would feel like I would be getting judged walking in there. But no, everybody's nice, and they're two brothers who own the store, my local store, and definitely I enjoy going in there and hanging out and talking to them. So
yeah, a lot of times they're good guys, a lot of times they're kind of weird. Andrew has a harder time out in LA because it's harder to get to, and there's so many, and the ones I went to, none of them were great.
Yeah, it's just that I haven't read enough. I barely any, and I just feel awkward when I'm in there.
Yeah,
there's so much more knowledgeable than me, and I'm such an amateur.
But if you go in and are like, "Hey, look, I don't know a lot about comics. Can you point me in the right directions? Like, I know I like Spider-Man." They'll most of the time they're just happy to have someone new, and they'll be like, oh yeah, absolutely. They'll go come over and help you out right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Andrew, I imagine you don't have as much extra money to spend because you live in LA and it's expensive.
It's true.
That's damn sure. My cousin's out there. She dances and models out there, and she lives like in a 4-bedroom apartment, I think, or no, 2-bedroom apartment. She shares like 4 people. Something like that.
Yeah, and probably pays as much rent as you do.
Probably. And I live in a pretty spacious apartment. So. God, California. I've always wanted to go. I'm going to go sometime.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to come visit you, Andrew.
It's a lie. It's a dirty lie.
I'm going to come stay with you, Andrew, okay?
You feel free. We always have a couch.
Sweet. All I need is a couch. Bed. That's all I need.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, what do you got for us?
I'm going to recommend the new Yahoo series, Other Space, which hasn't really gotten much press almost at all.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
I don't even think I was aware of it until about a month before this, which is really weird because it's the first TV show from Paul Feig since Freaks and Geeks. So you'd think it would get way more press. I mean, it's his show. He created it. He's the showrunner. I'm not sure why it's not publicized more, but I've watched all the episodes now. It's only 8, and it's not great, but it's really good. It's fun. The premise is a group of It's basically takes place in the future, and it's this group of space cadets and various people on a spaceship, basically a la Star Trek, go into this their first new ship and go out into space to explore it, and then they get trapped in a new dimension. And so it's a mix of sort of very low budget sci-fi with Paul Feig's kind of workplace comedy that kind of like The Office, and you know everyone, you know a couple people try to sleep with each other. There are hijinks and such. The guy from Mystery Science Theater is in it. Yeah, again, I'm not sure why it hasn't gotten press. Again, it's not some great show, but it's I really enjoy it, and it's a lot of fun to watch. It's a trifle. You can knock it out in a couple of days, but you'll have a good time watching it. So I would at least consider trying out the pilot. It's free on Yahoo, so I'd suggest that. I would also suggest, not really a suggestion, but a invitation to go see Ex Machina,
Don't. Oh, I'm.
which I've
Comes out.
seen, and I hope for you to go see it, so then we can talk about how overrated it is.
No,
Whoa.
no,
Oh
don't you
boy.
dare say
Get
that.
together and have a conversation about that.
Oh,
I
no.
was really looking forward to it because I love him. I was really psyched, and boy, was I. And again, it's not like awful or anything, but boy, was I disappointed by it.
Why, Andrew? Why'd you have to say anything?
We can talk about it, but
I'll
hey, I'm
probably
in the
be seeing it
minority. Most of the
tomorrow,
reviews
so.
love it. I don't know what to tell you. Most of the
Well,
reviews got like a 90%.
it doesn't come out world or doesn't come out worldwide till the 24th, right? Or nationwide.
It started in New York and LA last week, I believe, and this week it's out a little wider because it's out at one theater near me in DC.
I can't find it anywhere near me, so you'll get it in a couple weeks, I bet.
I was there opening day, God damn it.
And that's another thing. Where the hell is Domhnall Gleeson in all this? I know we have had to have seen. Oh, in Star Wars, that's what I'm talking about, because he's in Star Wars as well.
Yeah,
But I
well,
don't know
they're
who the hell he's
trying to
playing.
hide some things. I'm
My guess
I
is
know.
he's not going to be in it much. He'll come in and he'll be in it a little bit, and then his role will get expanded in the second and the third.
I'm thinking he's Luke's kid. Or has to be something.
He looks like him, that's for damn
Yeah,
sure.
that's what I'm saying. And like, because I'm pretty sure Gwendolyn Christie is playing the Chrome Trooper.
We know that for a fact.
Oh, we do that? We know that
Pretty
for a fact?
it might as well be confirmed. That's true.
Okay, and then Adam Driver's playing Kylo Ren. Has to. He
Yes.
has to be. So, and that's another thing that I'm excited about Star Wars doing is having female stormtroopers and you know all these people, oh, they were clone troopers at tournament. And they're like, oh, a black stormtrooper. I mean, who the hell do you think were these? They only made so many clones and they stopped production. I mean, who do you think came in and wanted to be stormtroopers?
Yeah, you can't run a
Different.
whole empire with. I hate that people make that argument. It's like you can't run a whole empire with just clones, baby. You
You
need
can't.
more. It's the goddamn empire. You need more people than that. You start
So,
recruiting normal people.
it's just like, but I'm excited for her because I love Gwendolyn Christie. I think she's awesome. And for her to be a badass stormtrooper or chrome trooper, it's gonna be really cool.
I'm excited for Lupita Nyong'o because I want her to
Who's
get work. She's
Yeah, she
so
needs
good. I
more
just want her to
things.
get work.
Yeah,
I
who's she?
don't want to
We
hear
don't.
any more about Star Wars. Sorry.
Okay,
I'm
fine.
just like
I know.
the whole spoiler thing, I'm over it. I don't want to know all about the movie before, much less like fucking 8 months before, because
Yeah,
we're that
okay.
far out still.
Fair enough.
Sorry, Dan.
No, it's fine. I know you're excited,
No.
and I'm excited too, but I'd be more excited if I knew less than I know now. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I agree. No, I agree. But I mean, I like to know who the people. From what they've shown, I want to know who's who. That's okay. I'm okay with who's who. From what they've shown, I
I'm
don't
actually
want
on Dan. I'd rather. I think a third trailer, and then that's all I need to know. I don't even really
Yeah.
know any more press.
Yeah, I
I've
don't want any more
stopped reading any
spoilers.
stories about spoilery things because it's just been disappointing. Like that's why I think Winter Soldier was such a great movie, is they had that huge twist that no one knew about.
That's true. They did a great job hiding that twist.
Which I think Star Wars still has a twist that we don't know about, or
Yeah,
not,
and
or
that's
something.
great. So I don't want to accidentally unveil that
Yeah,
I don't want to say it, but I read some behind the scenes
Don't
stuff,
do
and
it.
And Darth Vader is Luke's father.
What?
What?
All right, this podcast is over. I have to go cry myself to sleep. yeah, if you want to leave us feedback, thecinemasters.blogspot.com. Email us at thecinemasters@gmail.com. Check out our other shows at almproductions.net. And give us a call, 404-594-2567. Rate and review us on iTunes and like us on Facebook. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Amazing Bass, BASS. Tyler A. Crouch. And Andrew still doesn't have one, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, Andrew, you need to get in the Twitter world.
I have a Twitter, I just don't care.
Yeah, I don't really use it, but I would if people wanted to talk movies and stuff.
I would too. I love talking to people and getting their opinions.
Give a crap what I have to say on Twitter.
Hey, you're important to us, okay?
Yeah.
You're important to me and Dan and Jacob when he's here.
Yeah.
Jacob when he's here. And Rudy if he's not dead.
Rudy yeah. is not dead, but he feels... I could find the text, but the gist of it was that he and Tyler had similar tastes that he didn't feel like he was needed anymore.
Oh, no. Yeah, Tyler forced him out.
So, no, yeah, that happened.
Man, I feel bad about that.
No, he's also just busy with work and new life out west, and... he started his own podcast about Malifaux, which nobody knows about, but it's a really fun tabletop game. So if you're into Malifaux, check that out. If you're not, check it out, but you won't understand a damn thing that's going on.
Yeah, I tried. Tell I you didn't that understand. Now. I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah, I've played the game and talk. It's definitely a podcast about for and about the game intensely. Pretty in depth. So,
yeah,
mistakes were made. If you want to check that out, but yeah, so Rudy has unofficially quit this podcast. He may come back sometime in the future. But yeah, if you want to hear his voice, he's on Cinemaster, not Cinemasters. This is Cinemasters. He's on Coulson Lives and the Rogue Arrow podcast, and Mistakes Were Made, a Malifaux podcast.
I think it's important, by the way, that we come up with a business plan here. I think we need to know percentages, because when this baby gets bought out,
oh, I know, right?
You know who's on? You know what are we talking about? IPOs,
like 60-40. I'll get 60. You guys can split 40 between the rest of you.
That's fair enough. I'll take 10.
Jacob doesn't get shit because he's not here when we're talking about it.
Exactly. So then we're splitting the 20. Or that we're splitting the 40.
I'm fine with that. Deal.
Okay. Cool. Cool. Oh, man.
Yeah, join us next week. We're going to talk Daredevil. It'll be one or two episodes, depending on how long it goes. Because, yeah, Daredevil is on Netflix, and it's pretty good.
No, it's better than Good Dan.
I know. I'm lowering expectations.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, guys, it sucks. It's terrible. It's garbage.
But watch it anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, until then, I am Daniel James.
And I'm Tyler Krauss.
Oh yeah, that's what we say. The Cinemasters Podcast is an Autologic Cool Media Productions podcast. You can leave us feedback at thecinemasters.blogspot.com or send us an email at thecinemasters@gmail.com. Please rate and review us on iTunes and like us on Facebook, and go over to almppodcasts.blogspot.com to check out our other shows. As always, thank you for listening.
I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
Bye!
Bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye. Bye.